just reviewing certain questions and answers in a brief way that may pertain to the Seder, depending on who you're having at your Seder. Especially if there are people at the Seder that are not familiar with Judaism or do not necessarily believe in the fundamental concepts of Judaism. So one question that was raised is, what do you say if a person asks for a definition of God? What do you mean by God? Simple answer is, we can't define God. We don't know God. However, the question is, what is the source of the universe, of the reality, the environment in which we find ourselves? So if you acknowledge that we exist in an environment which, upon study, reflects tremendous amount of wisdom, design, and it's all based upon laws, and it's also a universe, an environment, which was apparently was designed to be developed. Because you see how much the world has developed from a few thousand years ago until now. The discovery of new things, new inventions, the whole situation keeps changing and changing and changing. Did that happen by accident? We maintain in Judaism that the reality in which we find ourselves, this universe which exhibits so much planning and design and infinite wisdom, is not self-explanatory. It did not produce itself. It has to have a cause. And the cause would have to be some being which is outside of the framework of the universe, and which is a being which possesses, so to speak, infinite wisdom, the capability to bring about this phenomenon, and that this being, we maintain, reveals his will to us. So that is, we recognize God as the source of the creation, the laws of nature, and also the one who is involved in the affairs of mankind, who has a purpose, created the world for a purpose, to enable mankind to achieve its proper perfection, its purpose, which is to use the gift that God gave mankind. The second point is that we believe that man is different than the animals, that man is a qualitatively different type of a being. And all the animals are essentially instinctual and have a limited amount of, you might use the term intelligence, to achieve whatever it is that they're supposed to achieve, but not the capacity for abstract thought, to a discovery of true ideas. That's an impossibility. Only man was endowed with a unique faculty, which we call the soul, which gives him the capacity to be involved in the search for truth, ultimate knowledge, and that's the purpose of man, to use his mind to discover truth and to live a life which is based upon that pursuit, and to perfect himself, to overcome his instinctual element, and not to live a life that's just like that of an animal. So that is the concept of basic idea of God and the basic idea of man and the purpose of life. Yeah, the next question that was raised is that Judaism believes in miracles, and is it a rational thing to believe in miracles? The question seems to be based upon the idea that everything follows from the laws of nature. That's just what we were talking about, the laws of nature. However, if we maintain that nature is an absolute, that nature is eternal and doesn't have to account for itself, so then you're right. It would be hard to explain the miracle. There can't be miracles because everything is determined by nature. But we maintain that nature itself is a product of God's will and that God rules nature. God set it up in accordance with his will, and God has complete power to make changes, to fashion it, to shape it, to bring about results according to his will. That indeed is the purpose of being involved in the story of the Exodus, because there God revealed to us that he can intervene and bring about results which would not happen strictly in accordance with the natural order. And that's what we call miracles. We also mentioned that the whole veracity of a miracle depends upon a certain factor, and that is the prophet. For example, when these events took place in Egypt, the plagues, which it would seem to a person living there wouldn't come about through nature. But one could still argue and say that, well, maybe we don't know the laws of nature well enough. And every so often, for example, the locusts or the wild beasts, whatever the case may be, seems contrary to nature, but now a person can say it's not a miracle, it's just that we didn't know. If we knew more about nature, we'd be able to predict how this would come about. For example, if you have a tornado or an earthquake, we don't say it's a miracle. It may be an aberration, especially if it takes place in some ways where it normally doesn't happen. But most people would say, it's not a miracle. We just don't know enough. If we knew enough about how the laws of nature work, and we had all the factors at our disposal, we could predict it. So how do you know that it's a miracle? The miracles of Egypt were always preceded by the warning of Moshe. And indeed, what makes it a miracle is that it's something which obviously Moshe himself can't bring about, because Moshe is a person. He's part of the system. So we categorically reject the idea that any person can have supernatural powers. There's no such thing. The deification of man, that's not Judaism. It's one of the primary issues in which Judaism differs with Christianity, who took an ordinary human being and decided that he was God. A complete absurdity. However, if that's the case, how is it possible for Moshe to predict the exact second when this occurs? And then afterwards, when Paro pleads with him to bring it to an end, he's able to say at the exact moment when it will end. Since Moshe himself has no control over the event, and there's no science that's able to predict this, nobody has any knowledge of this. Therefore, how is it possible for Moshe to know this? The ability of Moshe to know it and to predict it indicates that Moshe is in contact with that supreme being who's responsible for the event. So that teaches us that the supreme being who created the world, created it for our purpose, expects mankind through their free will to achieve that purpose, but when they go astray and they become corrupt, there are situations where God will intervene and will destroy the wicked. First, God gives them a chance, obviously. The objective is for the wicked to repent. That's why God did not just destroy the Egyptians. He gave them all these opportunities. This would also explain the purpose of the plagues, because God had the power to just destroy the Egyptians and the Jews would have been freed. So in most religions, that's the way it would work, because most religions just view themselves as the good guys, and whoever doesn't like them, their enemies are the bad guys, and that's what they would hope for. They'd hope for God coming and just destroying the bad guys. That's the way it is. The Arabs today, all the fanatic Arabs that want to destroy Israel, destroy the Jews, that's what they pray for. There's no question that's what they pray for. That's what they wish for. If they could have what they wanted in their own twisted, demented minds, they would want God to intervene and wipe out the Jews in the most painful kind of way. But you see, that's not part of Judaism. Judaism would never wish for such a thing. In the case of Egypt, what God revealed to us was that, to the contrary, you see, Moshe was very kind to the Egyptians. Moshe kept trusting the Egyptians. Whenever Paro came to him and asked him to entreat God, to plead with God, and to remove this plague, from a strict negotiation approach, you can criticize Moshe. Because Moshe said, fine, just tell me when. whatever you say. And I'll plead with God and it'll come to an end. But why? And then we see that Paro always went back on his word. Now, would it not have made more sense for Moshe to be a tough negotiator, to use his leverage and to say, no, I'm not going to remove the plague until I see something on you. You do something. Let's set up a way, a prisoner exchange. One side doesn't trust the other. You set it up in a way that you start releasing them and we'll start to bring an end to the miracle. We'll work it out in a way that you can't pull back. Moshe doesn't do it. And this happens a number of times. The reason for this is because it shows you God's compassion. The objective of the plagues, all the interventions, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, the greatest prophet in all of history, was sent to Paro to argue with him, is the greatest possible benefit, the greatest possible blessing. In spite of the fact that he was wicked, that he was oppressing the Jews, he received this tremendous benefit. Now, God could have avoided all of this. God could have removed the Jews, smitten Paro and all of his people, got the Jews out, and then Moshe would have been the leader just of the Jews. What's the reason for all of this? Because we maintain that God is concerned with his entire creation, not just with the Jews. The Jews have a role to play, but that role has a broader picture. It has to do with enabling the rest of the world to recognize God and fulfill their purpose. So here, the objective was not simply to release the Jews, but the objective was to give the Egyptians a chance to do tshuva, to repent, and to release the Jews on the basis of the recognition of the truth. That was the whole struggle. And that's why. First, there was the Mofes, which wasn't a plague, just the demonstration. The rod with the snakes. Then you had the plagues. And you see that they're mild at first, less intrusive, less compelling, in order to give them a chance to use their minds, not to be overwhelmed by the power of the plagues. And even when the plagues get stronger and stronger, it says that God hardened the heart of Paro. And according to many commentators, that means that God gave him more emotional fortitude, not to be shocked, not to be emotionally devastated, so that he could still use his mind and be able to make a choice. That's why Moshe was not a bad negotiator. Moshe did not want to coerce Paro by saying that he wouldn't remove the plague until you released the Jews. Because if he would have done it that way, then Paro would not be exercising free will. It would be duress. It would be compulsion. So therefore he said, fine, you've seen the power of God. You've experienced this. And now it's having its effect upon you emotionally. I'm going to bring it to an end. Once I've brought it to an end, now you could sit back in a calm state and review the facts and think it over. And then will be a moment of decision to choose to abandon the path of evil and to accept the existence of God and God's will. That's why he did it that way. So that if Paro would make the correct decision, it would be part of his perfection. It would be an expression of choice. It wouldn't be something which was imposed on him. When an event occurs in and of itself, it's, as I said, not always simple to say that this is a miracle. And the role of Moshe, one of the roles of Moshe, was to establish that what occurred was not a freak, so to speak, not an accident of nature, but something which was a result of God's will, because if it's a freak of nature, then there's no way that Moshe could have known about it in advance. So his ability to know about it in advance, and the fact that it has a purpose, and it's in line with God's will for the universe, that righteousness should prevail, and that the wicked should be chastised, given a chance to repent, but if they ultimately fail, then they're destroyed. That is the role of Moshe. Because as we said, how could Moshe know this unless Moshe was in contact with the Supreme Being? Getting back to the question, is it rational then to believe miracles? Well, there's nothing irrational about the phenomenon of a miracle. It only appears strange because we're used to the natural order. But once we accept the fact that the natural order is a product of God's will, and that God keeps control of the natural order, so then it's like anything else. Like you could go to a science demonstration, whatever, and there's people behind the scenes that are controlling it. It's just like they set it up this way, they can make changes. The question, however, is what about now when we don't have prophets? We find cases where, for example, the story of Purim, where you have Mordechai and Esther, where great events occurred within the framework of the natural order, could be miraculous. The fact that all these things happened and the Jews were marked for destruction and suddenly things change and how things came about, the sudden change around. You could say it was a miracle. Well, you could say, no, perhaps they just, good fortune, things came together and they extricated themselves. The decision was made by people on a very high level, Mordechai and Esther, after studying the phenomena, that this was miraculous. So once the Torah was established and certain basic principles about God and his relation to the world were given to the Jewish people, in every generation there exists the great rabbis who are familiar and they assess certain things. And they have the right, on the basis of their knowledge, to say that this is a miracle. Even there, we may not be 100% convinced. It's possible, even rabbis can make a mistake, it's possible that certain things will happen, which to all intents and purposes, after analyzing it from every angle, will appear to be a miracle, and they can pronounce it. By the way, there's a halacha that you have to make a bracha in a place. If you go by a place where a miracle occurred, if it's a miracle for the community, or it's a private miracle for you, or even for your father or grandfather, because that affected you. So then you have to make a bracha. Now this sort of presupposes that each individual has the ability to determine that it was a miracle, which is strange, because how can an individual determine whether something was a miracle or whether it was good fortune, fortuitous? Now, getting back to something we mentioned before, for example, on 9/11, and many stories, miraculous, so to speak. Obviously, many people were tragically killed, but also there's a significant amount of people who were pretty much in the same situation. Their situation was just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, in terms of where they were located at the time, than others, and yet they survived somehow. And they all have their stories. Because they happened to go over here, because this thing fell open, and something came tumbling down, but it all worked out in a way, then they were saved. Now, when people hear that, they say that's miraculous. What is the truth, though? Can we decide if it's a miracle or not? I would say that in an absolute way, I don't see how a person can maintain that a certain thing was a miracle. It's part of the phenomenon itself. In those situations, a building is exploding, all kinds of things are happening. So some of the things that are happening are going to cause certain people to die, and some of the things that are happening are going to cause certain people to be saved. Certain stairwells will be shut down, making it impossible to escape, and certain other stairwells or whatever will be opened up, and people will be able to escape. Well, all these things are happening. We can't explain. To us, the whole thing appears random. For the one who saved, was it a miracle? Or was it just the way things worked out? Pure chance. It's very difficult to say in an absolute way. Yet, the halacha would say that you make the bracha. you could regard it as a miracle. Because the idea that you can determine that a certain event is a miracle, that is a subjective phenomenon. It doesn't mean, objectively speaking, this is a miracle. For example, if somebody was attacked, or somebody was attacked by an alligator, in a situation where there's no way you can escape, and then certain things happened, it started thunder, lightning, and something fell off a tree and it hit the alligator, and you just got out of the situation, you would say, miraculous. That means that from your standpoint, you have to experience it as though it was a miracle and have a special recognition of God, even though you're not saying as an absolute that you know. It doesn't matter, because the event itself has a certain effect upon you, and Judaism demands that you use that to reestablish your closeness to God and your recognition that God does have the power to perform miracles. So there is a subjective element involved. On a subjective level, you can call it a miracle, and you can respond to it. Now, the idea of the miracle itself is completely rational, as I said, because it's just based upon the idea that the world functions the way it does because of the will of the Supreme Being, and he has the power to make changes. So there's nothing irrational. There's nothing more rational about the so-called natural order than the miraculous order. Both of them were determined by God's will. The only question is it rational to believe that a certain event was a miracle or was simply good luck? And that takes us to the foundation that the Torah does not demand that we believe the Torah because of faith, that we should have blind faith. But that if we study the phenomena, God set it up. God caused the revelation to occur in such a manner that's very compelling to us, to our minds. It appeals to our minds. And a rational individual will recognize and affirm that the Torah is true. Once you affirm the Torah is true, so then the events that are described in the Torah are true. And as far as miracles nowadays, that depends. A person experiences something, just because he experiences something, a ship is attacked and goes down, but you were saved because of the place you were in at the time, the helicopters came and you were rescued, everybody else was killed, that doesn't automatically mean that it's a miracle. As I said, the individual who experiences that should treat it as a miracle in terms of his gratitude to God. But you need more information. And if you have more information that would give greater probability to the contention that this was a miracle, or if there was a prophet, someone who was ascertained to be a prophet, and he confirmed that this was a miracle, so then it's not irrational. There's nothing irrational about the phenomenon. What is irrational is people just believing, for very superficial reasons, that this was a miracle or the other thing wasn't a miracle. It should be noted that in Christianity, for example, other religions as well, you have a lot of these evangelicals and they have these television programs and they try to appeal to people on the basis of exploiting certain people's weaknesses for miracles. That most people are not interested in religion because they want to discover the truth about God. They just want a practical benefit. It's like what I mentioned before about the Muslims, that their whole view is that they're the good guys, it's their God, God takes care of them, and God destroys all their enemies. As I mentioned before, you could not envision a situation where the Muslims would be praying to God that God should do things to bring the Jews to a recognition of the truth. Their prayers are that God should destroy the Jews. And their fantasies are that the Jews should suffer. And the more they suffer, the happier they will be. We don't have a phenomenon like that. As I mentioned before, the whole objective of with the Egyptians was that they should repent. And in fact, even after the Jews were saved, were delivered, and by the sin of the Egel, the golden calf, Moshe's prayer was, Lama Yomer Mitzrayim, that if you destroy the Jews in the wilderness, then what will happen is your whole purpose will be defeated because the Egyptians, meaning the Egyptians who oppressed us as well as the other nations, will say that there was a defect in God. They won't know the real reason that it was because the Jews sinned and they didn't deserve it. They'll say it was a defect in God. And that'll make it impossible for our purpose to be achieved. That is, that all mankind should recognize God. So you see that our basic desire, even with regard to the enemies, is that not that they should suffer, but that they should, if possible, be brought back to a discovery of the truth and become good people.